Thanks for inviting me. So what I would like to talk about, I changed my title. I would like to go back to ideas that Jean-Philippe has started to discuss, looking at the glass transition from an elastic point of view. And what I would argue there is that really what matters are the low frequency excitation vibration in your system, and try to relate that to things you've heard and other things that are coming from granular matter, where we have learned new things about what those low frequency vibrations are. Okay, so my question is, as many have asked, is why in some liquids the activation energy appears to grow as the temperature decreases? What's the mechanism behind that? And what decides a priori if a liquid should be fragile or strong? And I think something that is guiding us are in particular variables that correlate with the dynamics as the temperature varies. And one observable that has strongly influenced the field are the correlation between the dynamics and the thermodynamics. And what is observed typically is the excess entropy, so the entropy of the liquid minus the entropy of the crystal. And what you find within some good approximation is a correlation between the activation energy and 1 over the excess entropy. So to discuss what it means, take a few minutes to talk about what is the entropy in a liquid, because you have this separation of time scale from the vibrational to alpha or excessional. You can define the entropy as stemming from 2 terms. And one is the vibrational entropy associated with the volume of space, phase space that you visit on those short vibrational timescales. And the other one is a configurational entropy, which is associated with the number of states that you visit. And so one interpretation for this correlation that we heard come from Adam Gibbs and RFOT is that basically when you have less configurations, they are further apart and it takes more particles. You need to move more particles to go from one to the next. And so you indeed, in that picture, expect some correlation between the activation energy and the excess entropy. Then one problem is that when you want to connect to actual experiment, typically you assume that the excess entropy is a good proxy for the configurational entropy. And that's problematic because the assumption that you're making is that the vibrational entropy in a liquid is the one of a crystal. But really, those a liquid and a crystal, they don't live in the same structural space. There's no reason, a priori, why those two quantities should be equal. And in fact, it's known since a long time, since Goldstein, that the vibrational entropy of liquids is non-trivial and can be significant. And there are also just contradiction to this assumption. For example, if you look at hard spheres close to the glass transition, well, the entropy of the crystal is then larger than the entropy of the liquid. So if you were to make this assumption, you would find that the configurational entropy is negative, which is obviously impossible. So sometimes a less stringent assumption is used, but it's as problematic in terms of those points. So there is another interesting correlation between the dynamics and elasticity. Before showing the data, I want to introduce the idea, maybe in a slightly different manner than Dyer. And so think about any model of the glass transition, about how the activation energy increases with temperature. Well, you can write the activation energy as a product of 2 terms, and 1 term would just be the scale of energy in your system. And the other term maybe would be model specific, but maybe where you want to put the non-trivial aspect of it, maybe it would be a function of the size of the arrangement or something like that. So then elastic models go as follows. First is, what would be a natural guess for what the energy scale should be? And the idea is that when the system rearranges, locally is going to generate strain. And the energy of strain is measured by the shear modulus. And the second idea is that although those rearrangements are very rare, when they do take place, they are very fast. One expects that they take place on the vibrational timescale of the order of the terahertz. And so what we should care about in that view is the shear modulus at those frequencies. And then, so that's a guess, and then you have to do another assumption, which is that, well, in fact, it's not this term, but really this term, which is interesting, in the sense that it is this term that varies the most with temperature, which I have expressed here. Yes? Yeah, exactly, which would be something related to this function, say. Exactly. So that's why there is a length scale here. So, okay, I said what I wanted. And so the point is that correlation between elasticity and dynamics were observed before 50 years ago. Dyer provided some data, but last year some very convincing data came that could probe the shear modulus at much higher frequency. Before it was in the megahertz range, now it's really the gigahertz, and those authors use impulse stimulated scattering. And what they do basically is that they consider some six fragile liquids, so salol and other liquids here, and they renormalize the temperature axis by the shear modulus. And what you find then is that almost all of the fragility is gone, which means that, well, it supports that the activation energy indeed increases as the shear modulus. So this view, from this view, you will also expect a correlation between dynamics and thermodynamics. And the naive argument goes as follows. So the vibrational entropy is related to the log of the volume of phase space that you visit on short time scale. And you may write this volume as a product of momentum degrees of freedom times displacement degrees of freedom. Here, U square is a mean square displacement. And here I'm making the strong assumption that basically the mean square displacement are uncorrelated between different particles. And if you do that, then you can compute the specific heat and express it in terms of the mean square displacement of the particles, then just from a scaling argument, which would be only an approximation, you can relate the mean square displacement to the elastic modulus. And so you get that the vibrational specific heat is related to how the shear modulus varies in time. In temperature. So you predict those correlations, but the problem is that if you put the numbers in, the effect is too large. So you predict a specific heat that is three times larger than the than what's observed experimentally.
Where is the dynamics in this? There's not.
Sorry?
You say correlation dynamics and vibration. Where is no dynamics?
Previous slide, correlation dynamics with
heat. Oh, yeah. So I'm using the previous slide. So the question is, what went wrong, and can we improve on this argument? And to do that, I'm going to use a recent result that showed that that there is a strong correlation between the mean square displacement of the particle on the picosecond time scale and the long time dynamics. So again, it's an old idea. I should give name N-guy and organizers that look at that numerically. But what these authors did is that they showed that they could collapse many different liquids, in fact, liquids of very, very different fragilities, on a single plot. And instead of temperature, you plot 1 over the mean square displacement square. So it's telling us that the mean square displacement, in a sense, is a more universal way to represent the dynamics of liquids than the temperature. But in the talk, I'm only going to use the fact that there is a scaling function that seems to relate the log of the reaction time to the mean square displacement. Okay, so then the question is, what I want to do is to relate the vibrational entropy to the mean square displacement, which is a quantity easy to measure. And so I start from a linear approximation of the vibrational specific heat, entropy, and then you can you think about a set of harmonic oscillators. and you write what is the vibrational entropy in terms of the frequencies, your vibrational frequencies, then you take the derivative of that with temperature to get a specific heat. And what you get is that there is a non-trivial term that depends on how your spectrum evolves with temperature. And here, really, the fact that frequencies are temperature dependent capture two effects. And one is the fact that as the temperature evolves, you are changing the inherent structure in which you live, which will have a different linear spectrum. But also, it captures the fact that even within a configuration, if you increase the temperature, you will have non-linearities. And so you try to capture those non-linearities by basically doing a spectral analysis of the dynamics, which is somewhat non-linear, and you apply this linear description. And the fact that it's a good way to do it was tested by Phillips and collaborators in Selenium, where they could actually use this formula by computing the spectrum at various temperature and also do calorimetry, and it's a good approximation. So once you have that, what you can also do is relate the mean square displacement to the frequency of the spectrum. And if you plug that in, at the end you get a relation between the vibrational specific heat and the mean square displacement. And it's exactly the one we had before, but now there is a coefficient alpha that I will discuss in what follows. But basically, once you have that, if you use the scaling function I mentioned in the last slide relating mean square displacement and tau, what you get is that the vibrational specific heat, in fact the jump of vibrational specific heat, should be a linear function of the fragility of the liquid. So from this analysis, you expect that indeed the data on the mean square displacement reveal that there is a correlation between vibrational entropy and dynamics. Sorry. So now I need to comment a little bit on this parameter and what it's a function basically of how the modes are changing with temperature. And what matters to me that if you look at this expression, what you find is that if the modes, the way the mode change with temperature does not depend on the frequency itself, meaning that what the effect of temperature is just a shift of spectrum, then alpha equal 1. And then I recover exactly the naive argument I told you before. And if you plug that in, you take alpha equal 1, you again find that what you predict for the jump of specific heat is much too large. Twice too large, actually. But there is another effect if you look at the expression of alpha, what you also find is that if the increase of mean square displacement is due to soft modes that get even softer under heating your system, then indeed you will have an increase of mean square displacement, but it also means that the relative displacement between different particles is going to become more and more correlated. So because of that, the alpha is diminished. What you can show is that if the soft modes that contribute to your change of mean square displacement are around some frequency, then alpha will be smaller than 1, but bounded by something like the ratio of this frequency where the modes are evolving with temperature divided by the Debye frequency. And it's an effect which is well known that actually if you look at the spectrum of liquids, there are soft modes that evolve with temperature, and they do so near the boson peak, which you have heard before, which is an excess of low frequency modes with respect to the Debye model. So if you take typical value of the boson peak, what you get for alpha is that it should be larger than 1/5. Which gives you a jump of vibrational specific heat that's larger than 40% of the total jump of specific heat. That's a very crude argument, but it's, again, telling us two things, that we expect that there is this correlation, and we should also think about elastic models really as a stiffening of already soft modes. The stiffening is really the stiffening of the boson peak. not the overall spectrum. So the elastic scenario for the glass transition is that you have this stiffening of the boson peak. On the one hand, it leads to the dynamical slowing down, just by the simple argument. And on the other hand, it changes the mean square displacement and therefore the vibrational entropy. So some questions. One is, what is the cause of the change of the shear modulus with temperature? And the second question is, we have access numerically to rearrangement, to relaxation. Can we, does the numerical evidence, the numerical observation of rearrangement support this picture? So now I want to talk what's central to this view is really the nature of the boson peak and what affects them. So now I want to switch toward what we learned from granular models. And so you've heard about it already in the two previous sessions, that if you consider a packing of particles, you have some scaling properties in the spectrum. The spectrum is really weird. And we like this system because the length scale that describes those modes can become much, much larger than the atomic, the particle size. And it really enables to disentangle and to test in a stringent way theories. And so our approach has been to understand what are those modes in the simple system and then extend it to what happens when you have interaction or simple covalent glasses like silicate. Okay, and so basically one key idea is an idea of Maxwell that relates is the concept of soft mode. So if you look at this simple system, it is actually rigid, but if you remove a spring, then you can deform it for free. So it's a soft mode. And Maxwell has asked the following question: how many springs do you need in a set of points to have a rigid object? And you've learned it, it's larger than twice the spatial dimension. So, okay, so then building on this idea, what we have proposed is a variational argument that is non-mean field to understand what are those objects. And here you've heard a lot about this, so I'm not going to go through that. Just going to show you a picture of what happens if you indeed take out the rest of the system, build a cavity with free boundary, and then you generate zero modes like that. And another thing that's interesting is that you predict that those modes are filling the disorder, are measuring the coordination on some length scale that can be very large. And this length scale also characterizes the size of the force chance if you impose a point force in your system. So if you're far from the critical point and you impose a force, the response is going to be pretty homogeneous. But if you're very close to the critical point, you have those long chains that appear and whose length scale is given by that. Okay, another physical idea that I would like to, I can't explain, I will have to state it, but we have built those modes and they are very sensitive on coordination. But there's another aspect of the structures that really affect them, and it's the pressure. If you put pressure in your system, then the frequency of those modes decays and it can even lead to an elastic instability. And from this idea, what you can derive is an extended criterion for stability in the presence of pressure. And what you get is that the coordination minus the Maxwell coordination must be larger than something that scale like the square root of the strain in the contact. And this criterion for rigidity must be satisfied on all systems that are larger than this scale L star. On shorter length scale, you can have fluctuation because you're stabilized by the boundary. And so what we wanted to test is it the case that this constraint, does it affect the dynamics in any way? And to do that, we needed to go to a thermal system, and we went for hard spheres. And the question is, how do you apply the idea of elasticity two hard spheres. And we build this analogy between the free energy of hard sphere and the energy of an elastic system. And to do that, you need to go in regions where the relaxation time is large enough. You have a decoupling with a vibrational time scale. And then you can define a contact force network just by looking at which particles are exchanging momentum with whom. And it gives you a picture like that if you look at a 2D hard sphere glass. And then you can have a theoretical argument to compute the effective interaction between the particles. And you find that they connect to each other as if interacting with a logarithmic spring. And once you have that, you can define modes, you can apply this idea, and so on. And so what we find for hard sphere glasses is that we can measure both the coordination looking at those networks and the strain. And what we find is that all the points here fall near the saturation of this bound. So it means that there is something in a hard sphere glass, there is something fundamentally different from a crystal. You have those anomalous modes, those soft modes that appear in a weakly connected system that are just about to fail. So I think it's a quite direct evidence that indeed in this system there is an elastic instability that controls the dynamics. And it's also telling us that we are looking at a good object. So I think in terms of physical picture, it's telling us not to think about the formation of cages, but rather in terms of the establishment of a contact force network that has sufficiently coordinated to balance the destabilizing effect of pressure. Something that is really different from this picture is that, again, stability, mechanical stability, is not a local property, but it's characterized by some length scale, which is a length scale of those modes on which you are probing the disorder. Okay, another idea that I would like to put across is that now that in hard spheres you can define these contact force networks, you can compute a spectrum, a dynamical matrix and a spectrum. And you can compare the dynamics, the rearrangement, to this spectrum. And what you find is the following. So here you have growing packing fraction. And what is represented in this displacement field are sudden rearrangement that takes place in the system. And you can project them on the modes. So what you see here is the projection on the soft modes of your system. And this number here is the fraction of the modes that you need to capture half of the total displacement of the rearrangement. So if this is very small, it means that only a few degrees of freedom are actively leading to rearrangement in your system. And what you find is that this fraction is very small. So indeed, most degrees of freedom are inactive during rearrangement. And the soft degrees of freedom contribute. And this fraction that is plotted here decreases as the packing fraction increases. So if you want, as you increase the packing fraction in the hard sphere glass, you have less and less channels to rearrange. Okay, so I think that's a direct evidence. I think if you look at what are rearrangements, you find that they are directly connected to the softest mode in your system. Right, so you have a direct correlation between rearrangement and soft mode, which is what you would expect from this picture. And one could argue that it could be that it's just a sort of crossover and that it only happens in the numerical timescale that we can explore. Maybe it's true, but we don't see any signs that it's changing. In fact, as the viscosity increases, we find that it becomes truer and truer that only the soft modes participate to the relaxation. So then I have to discuss what the other question was, what could be causing the stiffening in the system? And my opinion is that fragile liquids, I think they will be preferred structures that can have various names, frustration, limited domain, clusters of liquid-liquid transition, pin crystallites, or things like that, that they would tend to be more coordinated. And if they appear in a liquid, then they will stiffen it. And they will, so the interstices would be softer, but would still feel, because again, elasticity is not local, but the soft modes are governed by some length scale, they would feel, even in the interstice, you would feel the presence of the structure that show up. So, okay, so that's the sort of scenario that I would like to put forward, is that you have growth of structure in liquid. This affects the boson peak, it stiffens it. And that leads to a dynamical slowing down and a decrease of mean square displacement that leads to a decrease in vibrational entropy. So in this picture, you indeed expect that there would be some correlation between configurational entropy and dynamics, but the strongest correlation should be with the vibrational entropy. Okay, I have some stuff for the discussion, but I think I went through already, so I could answer some of those points if they come up. I'm done. Okay. Yes.
So I'm going to take the chair's prerogative. So you showed a formula on the way to doing your final thoughts about how heat capacity and fragility were related.
And, yeah.
And I got a little confused about whether you were abandoning that formula or just multiplying it by a constant.
I guess I tried to say too much. So I sort of skipped the expression of alpha and that here.
Yeah.
This formula.
Well, or the next one where you related to the fragility. So do you feel that relationship modulo some constant is correct? That's what you're asserting is correct?
Yeah, basically. And the, exactly.
So what is it with the talk that we heard yesterday? Professor Agami, you know, could you please say something about this?
Because I have a lot of problems with this idea. First of all, that you are dealing with G as a constant, but G is a very strongly frequency dependent.
Sure, but here, look, I'm not looking with G, I'm looking at U square.
I know, but in order to calculate U square, you need force constant, okay? So you are softening all the force constant at the same time, but that's not what's happening. You see that the glass transition temperature is defined by very, very high viscosity, where the time scale is very long, okay?
Sure.
So if you do neutron scattering for measurement and measure SQ omega, mm-hmm. Most of the SQ omega remains unchanged. Only a very, very low quasi-elastic portion changes through TG. So most of the vibrational frequency is unchanged through TG. You have to go to, you know, pretty high temperature to see a substantial change.
Well, but look, I mean, the mean square displacement, you just have to look at the mean square displacement, which is directly related to your spectrum. And if you look in fragile liquids, your mean square displacement as a strong kink.
You have to calculate U square as a function of frequency. That the low frequency portion is increasing right above TG.
No, here I'm talking about mu square at the vibrational time scale. So that carries
very, very small amount of entropy.
Well, that's what I'm trying to estimate. And so basically. I'm going to this argument.
And also that they in simulation.
Look, let me first answer your question. I can go to the simulation after that. But what matters to me is the vibrational entropy. So I need to look at the mean square displacement in the terahertz range. Okay. Now, if I were to look at the mean square displacement on the nanosecond timescale, then there are fast relaxations, there are other processes, and they will have some entropy associated to them, but I'm not counting them here. No, but if you look if you look at the mean square displacement at the picosecond time scale, it's still at the kink, okay? So there is the, which basically means that there is something going on. Yeah, TG, sure.
Volume changes because of a harmonicity, but for that, that's the slope is what's important. So
yeah, it's a kink between those.
That is mostly configurational.
You know, sorry?
That's the change due to this inherent structure.
That's here, but that's in the formalism here as well.
I think the effect of these small
changes. I think we're getting into the
It sounds like a debate about the underlying theory. I want to just, the formula, it troubles me only in the sense that I thought that Professor Agami gave us results yesterday that didn't agree with that formula. That's all I'm saying. I don't care about, I mean, we can debate out, you know, to midnight about whether the, you know, what's the reason, but I thought there was, there. Oops, where'd it go? There it is. Yeah. So the right hand. So he was looking at liquids with different m values, but he was always getting the same heat capacity, delta C.
Oh, you mean? Oh, you.
Ah.
No, sorry.
So it's not the vibrational one.
It's only the vibrational here, right?
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Well, okay. I actually, the
on the same slide. So I have two questions. One about this vibration. You know, if you take the formula at the top, of course, what the derivative or the sign of that derivative actually depends on which sort of trajectory you follow. At constant volume, that sign is actually positive. Right, which means
I wanted to discuss with you. I even guessed that we will have a conversation. So here. You refer to this stuff, yeah. You worked on this paper.
No, I'm not. That's not me.
But the
point is, I don't think that, well, maybe that derivative won't be large enough that you actually get a delta C vibrational, which is negative at the glass transition, but that's sort of, in principle possible, right?
You mean for this formula, you mean?
Yeah, because it depends on how the frequencies change, and that depends on whether you're doing constant volume, constant pressure.
Yeah, I guess in silica, where the expansivity is going in the other direction, that's possible.
While sort of I agree with a lot of things that you said about vibrational, you know, entropy, the fact that it changes, I agree. Is that a good way to actually look at the problem? It's not clear to me. Because it is something that, in my view, sort of rides on other things that are going on in the system, and it will be correlated, but the correlations may change depending on the experiment you're doing. Question is clear.
Yeah, I mean, I think basically what I'm trying to say that, okay, there is a sort of very naive, simple picture of what would generate the activation energy, or which is the increase of activation energy.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that this very basic picture seems to do pretty good in connecting to.
So I, for the sake of discussion, I want to accept the idea that this Debye-Waller factor is a good thing to look at in understanding relaxation time. So I don't want to argue about that. But given that, then you're sort of now looking at what happens to vibrational entropy.
Yeah.
And that seems to me to be a very case-specific kind of quantity to look
at. Well, I'm trying to use
assuming that U squared is a good quantity.
Well, I use this U square because it's very easy to measure. You have access to it. So obviously, it's not what one would like to have is really look at the spectrum, how they evolve with temperature for many fragile liquids and for many different liquids, but we don't have very good data on that. There's selenium, a few data like that. So what I'm really trying to do is a poor man approximation to see if the effect is consistent. Play with those data that are easy to measure and where we know the behavior for a very wide range of fragility. So that's basically this Larini stuff here. I hope that it would stimulate a more detailed measure of,
Maybe we should talk.
The second question, which I'll state quickly, and I don't know how long it will take you to answer. You know, this kind of approach of looking at constraints and looking at soft modes seems to make intuitive sense and seems to be useful in the limit of very strong interactions or in the limit of only repulsive interactions, sort of the hard sphere type of limit or the covalent glasses. But it's not very clear how useful it is or how one thinks about systems in that language if you have sort of attractive interactions but are not covalent bonds. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, we have a paper on that, so I can comment on that. So basically the idea is that say in a Lennard Jones you'll never get very close to this critical point. Okay. But you can still say something about the boson peak. But then you really have to take into account, because a priori your shelf of neighbors, you have many neighbors, 12 or something like that, right? But you really have to think about now the disorder in the bond, the fact that you have strong bond and weaker bond. And then you have to extend the variational argument to this situation, and you can show that you can compute an effective coordination number, and from that, well, we have tested numerically that those ideas give us an approximate description of the boson peak and so on. But there we expect that the length scale are never going to be super large, no.
Okay.
No, I have one.
In the normal metallic system or Lennard Jones, whatever, you don't only have strong and weak bonds, you have positive and negative bonds.
Yeah.
Therefore, it will be much more difficult to get an effective bond number.
Well, but I mean, if you look at very far away, all the bonds are sort of small and negative and so on, but that's a weak perturbation.
No, you get the nearest neighbor bonds. I mean, you have after all three space directions, therefore you have one positive and two negative normally. And in our computer simulation, I mean, it's always this cancellation between the plus and minus.
Yeah, so we try to take that into account. Okay. Basically, what we do is that, okay, I can try to explain it a little bit better, but what we try to do is to take a cutoff, look at the strong bonds in your system, compute the modes, forgetting all the rest, and there we can use this variational argument, and then you look how your modes are shifted by everything that you have neglected. And that contains the negative stiffnesses and the positive ones.
Okay, I think I disagree, but we have to discuss it.
Okay.
All right. So
I declare that this session is over. Let us thank the speakers.